And I missed it all.
Did you? Yeah, he spoke to have a tape recorder.
I guess it was stuck. But you know, this part about your grandfather coming in here in 1898, probably.
Yeah.
That would be just about. We won't come across very many people with that kind of.
Well, I can't really verify it all, you know, but. I was telling you about where they came from, originally from this place, Beauce County, Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And this group were all sort of left here, were all sort of distantly related, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were, I think the Pottery. Remember he used to be a milkman?
I remember Pottery very well.
I noticed in the phone book there's still about five here.
Yeah.
But evidently they were second cousins. And this chap, I noticed this Gagnon over here, I believe he lived out east. And I didn't know that, but I think he was a cousin of my dad's, too. I told my dad owed some money here for getting, what is the name of that part? Is it horses or something? What year was that?
It was either 1907 or quite soon after 1907.
Yeah, this is 1907, July. I'm going to show you this.
Well, you were telling me about Kendrick, and that was quite an interesting story.
Yeah, that was
the man came out here with a title.
Yeah, remember me telling you about Lord Kendrick?
Yes.
His name was in here. Here's Captain what? Shot?
What's the name?
Captain
Shot. We gave a shot.
Well, there are several captains in there, and those captains are riverboat captains.
Yeah, my mother used to speak of those.
Now, we knew one of them very well.
Yeah.
We knew Captain Mills very well.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a Captain Heat, and his...
Yeah, wife, Captain Heat, I remember that name.
His wife was my music teacher. Her name was Parkinson. You do remember the Parkinson?
Yeah, that he was a tall chap.
Very tall.
Look.
Oh, yeah.
He bought a share, Coulter. What's that, a giant plow? Three bowling? Well, that's what he said. It was near 1907.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it must be 1908, because I see December there. February here, that's... Yeah, they're January 31st, 1908. Now we're into... No, there's another. That's 1909, I guess. There's January. January 30, that's 1907, 1908. This must be 1909. That's the year they got... He probably would. That's when he started farming, because that's when they were married, you see, my mother and father, 1909. And he started farming then. Here's Joe Gagnon. He used to farm here.
Joe,
Scott, is that Scott Willie? They got a lot Willie. Isn't it Scott Willie?
Lot Willie was the father and Scott Willie was the son.
Yeah. There it says 1911 volume. Langley, that used to be our neighbors. I saw that name here.
That family is still around here, some of them.
Are they?
Here is
Langley Carpenter, Pine Creek. But they used to be right they used to live further down towards Pine Creek. Yeah. The boy, I was at the funeral when his brother was going through the bushes shooting rabbits. Remember, you ever heard of that?
I remember that now.
Yeah, and he was, and he shot his brother.
That, you know.
He would have been saved in this day and age, but you know, there wasn't any getting people to doctors.
Getting to the doctors.
And Goopy?
Goopy.
Goopy?
Yep.
I think that's Goopy. Here's F.R. Faulkner. He was here pretty early, too.
He came here in 1910.
Yeah, see, that's your dad.
In the fall of 1910.
Sack of coal. Two sacks of coal.
Blacksmith. Mm-hmm. Blacksmith coal.
Is that what he was getting?
It always came in sacks.
Oh, that's for the house.
Oh.
He would get it back for, wouldn't he?
Maybe he just bored some because we used to sell blacksmith coal.
Did you? I see.
Oh, I hated to sell blacksmith coal.
I'll tell you one thing we used to do too. My dad and I on the river, my dad used to put up ice.
Yeah.
For the butcher shop. I don't know if we put any up for you or not, because.
Yeah, I think you did. Everybody in town used to get ice.
Yeah. And we used to go out with we used to hire a fellow named Mackenzie.
Jack?
Where would you go? One of the lakes?
No, just
the river. One morning we couldn't, on one Saturday morning we stopped because we couldn't do it because it was 44 below.
Well, the story is that once it was 72 below in the middle of the river.
I don't doubt it.
Well, but it's 44 below that day. My dad said, well, it was too cold to make ice. Isn't that interesting?
Well, that was quite a process. I used to board those people and used to get the ice and put it in the river.
And then all summer we'd have to dig them up.
Yeah.
This is the paper. No. Mm-hmm. This is the paper for the town group now.
Fire this strike. 35 business places gone. 500,000 lot. Now, gee, was I don't.
No, that's
what year was that?
Too early for you. 1913,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never heard my dad talk about it, but of course they were living up on the farm. 1913, beautiful eastern residential lines.
How do people manage to save these old papers like that?
I don't know where they came from.
I suppose a few people had the forethought to keep records like that, but most people didn't.
Well, then you run across them in funny places, like under linoleum and things like that.
Yeah. Oh yes, and left in abandoned houses and things like that.
Here's Stoker. This is the third time Stoker has been burned out. Dick, the bed moose, was turned loose.
Oh yeah, that's the bed moose, right? Cold druggist, Stoker's Vaughn Marsh, as he does. Oh, I didn't know that Stoker. There was a chap here in 1923, I can't think of his name, but he ran he had a blacksmith shop. He used to go once in a while, my mother let him go, and we'd go and sleep with him. I'd go and sleep with him. And I can remember all that was lined inside was a tar paper. You can still smell this tar paper shack to them.
That wasn't the Lipscombs.
No, that was the Negro people. No, these were the, I don't think the Lipscombs were there in 1923. I think these people bought Lipscombs out. might have been there.
No, Lipscombs were there quite a little bit later than that, because Nathaniel was quite a boxer, yeah. And he used to give us kids boxing lessons.
Yeah, but then his father was
his father.
Boxing. What was his name?
Richard.
Yeah. My father told us, you remember the tellers of telling that story about going in and Richard, you know. Mm-hmm. And he'd get there, he did boxing with him after he got, half a bottle, and he'd go over and box with Richard. And he'd say, is that the hardest you can hit the old nigger, you know? I don't know how those Negroes put you up with that sort of thing.
Richard was a pretty fun man.
He was, wasn't he? Oh, yeah. He saved my dad one time.
Did he?
Yeah. My dad was, there was three fellows got in an argument with him. And they were driving home, and one of my brothers with them, I don't know whether it was Oliver or Nelson, and these three fellows stopped at the blacksmith shop and said, hey, we want to see him. And my dad said, what do you want? And he said, we want to fight. And Dad said, okay, and gave the reins to my, I think it was Nelson. He went over there. He said, well, what'll I fight? He said, do you fight the three of you at once or one at a time? The fellow said, well, you look like a pretty old man. He wasn't old, he was only about 45 then or so. And he said, okay, so he said, I'll take the biggest one. He took a tall one, and he said he missed him, the first one, but he saw the other one coming behind him, you see, so he turned around and he fainted at this one, and then he turned around, and then he missed the first one, and he turned around, and he hit the other fellow, and knocked him cold. And then he took a hit at the tallest one, and he hit him in the throat, and he started yelling. And just then, Lipscomb came up, and the fellows, the third man had a piece of iron bar he picked up there. And he was, Richard Lipscomb said, put that down. And, you know, my dad might have had his skull broken.
Sure.
That's just a little story about Lipscomb.
Well, he was a very fine man.
Fine man. Well, Nathaniel was...
Richard Lipscomb always had a key for our hardware store.
Did he?
Because he used to, maybe on a weekend or something, he would have to do a job and he'd need a piece of iron. So he always had this key.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, yeah. The Tabasco Hotel, 40,000.
Yeah, you were asking about the Tabasco Hotel at
Yeah, that's how they get these. Sometimes they find them in somebody, an old house torn down or something, and then... What year was this?
When did the Athabasca Echo, they used to call it?
Well, yeah,
the Athabasca Echo.
The Conquest were in charge of that.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, that is quite recent, probably.
This is 1913. Oh, that's Russell's there, you see the name?
J. Russell.
Remember me telling you about the Russells?
Mm-hmm. Here's Lipscomb's ad, R.T. Lipscomb Blacksmith
in 1920. Oh, yeah, he was pretty here pretty early. We lived in a house just near his place. I wonder how it was in here.
Well, I see what you mean. You would have to live in town in order to go to school.
Yeah, because they didn't have school during the summer, winter time then.
Well, now, can you remember?
Here's Mac Donnell's father's was the commanding end division 1913. Now, he's a friend of mine. He was a chief superintendent too, but he was born here. I'm pretty sure.
It's Mac Donnell.
Yeah, he lives in Calgary now. That's his father.
Was he born in Athabasca?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Oh, sure. If his father was here.
Yeah. His father later became the head of the 1917 or 18. He formed the Alberta Provincial. And his dad was put in charge. But he didn't last too long because he was too autocratic. Then he was made a magistrate in Peace River.
Well, MacDonnell had quite a long Canadian history, didn't he? Bishop in there, wasn't he?
Well, his father is not his father. One of his grand uncles was the first Catholic bishop of Ontario.
Yeah.
Charlie Clouse.
Well, Clouse, that's fairly local.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just looking for T.H. Taylor, photographer.
You must have quite a bit about Mills. Oh, yeah, Percy Taylor. Yeah, he took that picture, a group picture of ours. Percy Taylor.
Which Mills are you talking about?
He was a member here for a while. I think he was
here.
George Mills.
Here. Yes, I knew him.
George Mills. He's quite a tall fellow. Wrinkles along the, I remember a lot of crow's feet around his eyes. My dad was one of his early sponsors, and then he got mad at him because my dad wanted a big position of bailiff.
Bailiff?
And George wouldn't recommend it for him.
Is that right?
And my dad then went and worked for the next election for a fellow named D'Angelo.
In
the 20s.
20s.
I think that
D'Angelo.
Yeah, I think he was up toward Lac-La Beach someplace.
Not too far out. He was only about.
It was a lake there.
Yeah, there was there's a tiny lake out where D'Angelo was. D'Angelo got a federal government appointment under R.B. Bennett.
Did he?
He was. Do you remember during the Depression?
Davis was our member then.
Yeah. And you remember they brought in the moratorium on debt? And you could go to a debt moratorium board and either get your debts cut down or you could get time to pay them. Mm-hmm. And John D'Angelo was the man who received the appointment.
I think he had a fairly good education.
Must have had.
Yeah. But my dad nearly wore his car out taking John D'Angelo around.
Mm-hmm.
Electioneering. But they lost. And then my dad supported that other liberal king, Frame, John Frame.
Oh, yeah.
He was a butcher.
That's right.
Then he had a farm out east here, I think, or west. And I remember my mother and I voted against John Frame because he went from liberal to UFA.
Well, that was when my father ran.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, I see. Dad voted for your father, my mother and I voted for John Frame. And Dad said to us, no, was it? Did I? Was then, no, I wouldn't have a vote. No, I wouldn't have a vote then. My mother voted for John Frame. But he told her beforehand, he said, I hope you don't go and kill my vote. But
why is very often killed votes? Well, what happened was, Frame was elected, I guess it would be in 1926, as a liberal.
Yeah.
And in 1930, he decided that he could be re-elected easier as a UFA than as a liberal. And there was great excitement, and everybody who had supported him and were mad about this came and asked my father to run as a liberal, and that would be in 1930. And my father did beat him.
Yeah.
But that is what licked Frey, was the fact that he turned...
Well, that's what my dad was called in the Turnco.
Yeah. I remember your father taking part in that election.
Yeah.
And supporting my father.
Yeah, but my mother, I forget the reason now why mother was voting for Frame. Maybe it was just obstinate or something. But there was a principle involved that I don't know what the principle was.
Maybe because he was a farmer.
It was something like that, you know, and that he'd been a member and he had experience or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember that. Well, we won't keep you anymore. This is very interesting.
I've been interested. Would you, just before you go, would you
Would you tell me about the years you spent in the RCMP?
Because you started out, of course, as a constable. Where and in 34, you said.
Yeah.
And then you must have been promoted quite quickly.
No, not particularly. I was promoted to the corporal in 8 years, which is not, which was a little better than the average one is about 11 to 12 years, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was promoted to sergeant at 15.
Mm-hmm. Where were you then?
15 years service. I was at Kindersley, at Saskatoon, actually, where the promotion came. But then I was promoted to a sub-inspector when I had 17 and a half years service. And then from then on, I went up.
Well, I just met you once that I can remember before today. You called around and talked to my father, and you were an inspector at that time.
Yeah. Well, I think I've come in to thank him for that
recommendation. Well, then you were in charge of K Division for a while.
No, I was at never in charge of K Division. I was in K Division. I was in charge of the Lethbridge Subdivision at Lethbridge for 4 years. And then went on to the to Ottawa and was in charge of, second in charge of the inspection team, which is like a bank inspector's. We'd go out and see if the boys were doing things according to what.
Okay.
And then I went to Winnipeg and I was in charge of the criminal investigation branch for Manitoba.
Okay.
That's where I ended up.
Okay.
We were in Manitoba for 5 years, and that was in August 69 when we started. Then we moved to Salt Spring, but we bought our land, Salt Spring, when we were at Prince George.
Mm-hmm.
I was in charge of the subdivision there. And the town then of Prince George was 15,000, and now it's 50 to 60,000.
Yeah, I think I'm going there one of these
days. Are you?
Sometime in the night. It's about the only place in BC, you know, that I've never been. And that's where we spend a lot of our
Lafferty.
Holidays.
Lafferty, I've heard that name.
Lafferty? Yeah, they've been around. Lafferty was a...
Who used to run the sawmill?
Tutty. The one you'd probably remember would be Tutty.
No.
Missile?
There was somebody with a French name before him. Oh yeah, there was a Bissell, maybe.
Bissell had a small mill.
Yeah.
His son is still here. He runs that Imperial Garage down the town. But Tutty had the big one in the 20s and it burned out.
With my uncle George, he used to go to Collin Lake and fish in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
They used to stay in a clear the caboose. I forget who his partner was at the time.
A lot of people fished. McIntosh was a big fisherman.
Wabasca, I heard that name. Wabasca, there was a man, one of those elections, 1930, my dad led a team to 1930 or before. My dad hired out his team to take a man to be the returning officer at Wabasca.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to send a government check for the team, you know, after he came back. And never, he's been waiting for the check since this day, I guess. To this day, the fella put it all in his pocket, I guess. Somebody from Edmonton, they sent out. But in those days, they used to steal, you know, the ballots. There'd be 100 votes come in from Wabasca, and there'd be probably 40 voters.
Well, there was an election invalidated here one time.
Was there?
Yeah. On account of stuffing the ballot boxes. you have an English name, and you came from the Beauce, and your parents were originally considered French.
Yes, but I think that they're... I found the baptismal record, and it's spelled C-H-I-N-K and C-H-I-N-C-K. And evidently when they went to Minnesota, it was spelled S-H-A-I-N-K, and then the teachers changed it to S-H-A-N-K.
Well,
and the reason behind it all is because it's phonetic. It was none of these habitants could speak, could write in Quebec. Very few of them, unless they were raised for the priesthood or something like that. So they were spelling this sort of foreign name phonetically. The priest would spell it, entering it into the registry. So that's why there's so many different spellings, and that's how it evolved in this present name, S-H-A-N-K. And even today, it's evolving further. The two of my brothers have children with the S on the end of the name. So in several places, they're called Shanks.
That was quite common. My name has been changed.
Has it?
I saw the gravestones of the first Falkners in Canada, and it was F-A-L-K-N-E-R.
Oh yeah.
And sometime in history, it got to be F-A-L-C-O-N-E-R, and I haven't yet been able to find out when that change happened.
Oh.
But I think that's quite common.
Yeah. Well, my dad always spoke of. Sometimes he'd say we were part German, sometimes he'd say they're part Scots, so he really didn't know himself. He left there when he was a boy, 2 years old, from Quebec, and he never went back.
Mind you, there were an awful lot of English names in Quebec that never, you know, that had French as a native tongue. For instance, remember Toblake, the...
Oh, yes.
Well, he always spoke with an accent. He was he was raised as strictly French.
Of course, to some of the Wolf soldiers either deserted or some of them stayed there.
Yeah.
A few of them.
Sure.
And then some emigrated from the States and came up to the States to Quebec, and they eventually married French people and. Our first record, first church record I see, where this name appears in 1942, was common. But due to the fact that I couldn't speak or write French, I was rather embarrassed to try to follow it up.
Well,
it's certainly been nice having